Welcome to the Virtual Power Teams podcast, the number one podcast for working remotely and building powerful virtual teams. My name is Peter Ivanov, international keynote speaker and author of the book Virtual Power Teams, translated in six languages. Tune in every Tuesday for the very latest in virtual leadership or visit my website, peter-ivanov.com. Welcome everyone to our next podcast. And today we have an exciting guest, Vijay from the Silicon Valley. We've met with him, it feels like several times, but I think it was only one time live and then the other several virtual. We've met in San Francisco, and funny enough, both of us today have a San Francisco Bay as a background. Vijay is a CEO of the Project Management Institute, San Francisco chapter. And he will tell us more about himself. We've met at a conference where I was a speaker and he was the host. And then we had several other engagements. We've kept in touch. It's been, I think, 1 or 1.5 years ago, but it feels like a lifetime. And I remember vividly today, we just see on the screen, but then he was working for Salesforce, one of the very, of the companies driving the digital innovation. And he showed me, I'm not sure which floor was that, Vijay, the top floor where you see the whole...
61st
floor, yes, on the Salesforce Tower. So we had some nice memories together, but now we are for you online. So Vijay, welcome to our podcast. Please tell us who you are and what you do.
Thank you so much, Peter, for the great introduction. And again, you know, giving me this opportunity to speak with you. And first of all, it was wonderful meeting you today, and also the very first time in March. So I remember San Francisco Bay Area chapter hosted the regional event last 2019 March, right? You were precisely right, 1.5 years back. And then you accepted it. You flew down to San Francisco. It was a beautiful Hyatt. And your speech was like received very, very positively. I mean, everybody were like, who is this person? So it was fantastic. So one thing it stood out from that presentation to me is like how energetic you were. I mean, people would have complained about the jet lag and all the other things. You were so energetic. You were interacting with almost all the attendees of the event, like more than 200-300 attendees. And also you took time out to meet with me and then visit my office, and then we explored the 61st floor in the downtown of San Francisco. That's quite a good memorable experience for me. And what is strikingly important is you presented on the topic of virtual power teams, how teams globally can come together and collaborate virtually. And then I think the whole world is doing that this year, right? So you've been a pioneer of that. So
yes.
I'm sure you were.
It's been an honor. I mean, that's what jet lag and everything. I traveled the world to meet the people, in fact, and that gives me energy. So thank you for taking time.
Also this year, the chapter is so glad to partner with you early November. We had wonderful speakers, including you, CEO of PMI, CEO of Scrum, and Harvard Business School professors, and all the other great speakers. And you actually, it was your midnight. You joined us and you graced our occasion with another excellent speech. So again, once again, thank you for the partnership. And it's always nice to talk to you. Yeah.
My honor and immense joy.
Yeah. Talk about my myself. I'm by profession, I'm a program manager, project manager, so however people would like to call my official role title. Currently where I work at Facebook is technical program manager. And so that's what I do for more around 15 years. I've been doing some sort of project management, program management and portfolio management at various different organizations. And I started my career back in 2000 as a software engineer. So I was coding for a few years, and I've been an analyst and then a lead, and eventually became a project and program manager. So that's kind of my trajectory, and I've been liking and enjoying it. And I've been able to work with a lot of university students and other professionals to inspire them to be a project and program management professional. So that's kind of what I would call myself as. And apart from working full-time for Facebook as a technical program manager, I do volunteer at various organizations, especially at PMI, San Francisco Bay Area chapter, where I've been volunteering as a CEO for operations. Basically, it's a nonprofit organization. I put together the team of leaders where we work together to serve the community, be it engaging or creating the events, or being the bridge between the PMI Global and the local chapter members. So that, and from next year, the PMI has appointed me as a region mentor for Region 1, which is a Northwest region of US, where I would be mentoring or advising the boards of 16 different PMI chapters in the regions of Oregon, Washington, Alberta, and British Columbia and Utah regions. So that's kind of fantastic.
Yeah. So much an honor to have you. So you bring a unique perspective, as you say, in a very humble way. You work for Salesforce, great company. Now you're working for Facebook, running big projects. And we know that the business is getting dynamic, more things. You have to address it as a project and in an agile way. And you also bring the perspective of volunteering. And now just running a CEO, a biggest probably chapter, I'm not sure if this is the biggest, the San Francisco chapter, and now taking mentoring for another 16. It must take a lot of energy to work for these demanding companies and on top to volunteer. Tell me why you do what you do. What gives you energy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, I have not really thought about it this way, but thank you for bringing that perspective. San Francisco is one of the biggest chapters, yes, but in the US, it's, I don't know, it's definitely one of the top five biggest chapters. I remember for sure Washington, D.C. is the biggest, but I don't know which is the, maybe we could be the second or third or fourth or fifth. Yeah. One thing which drives me or which gives me the energy, I think, you know, I could relate with you is as well the passion which we show. Again, I see myself come from India, coming from a humble background. On the way, I met lot of people, a lot of interesting people, a lot of people who believed in me, who believed in my skills, talent, leadership, who gave me that opportunity. And I tried to do my best, right? So I tried to do my best. And helping others is something, you know, I always wanted to do, because, you know, a lot of people helped me to come where I am today. Mm-hmm. So this PMI is a very easy way I could reach out to many people. Like you said, being part of the 3,500 members and serving 20,000 community members is not an opportunity everybody will easily get. When I joined 6 years back, I was just like that. Volunteer, then I was like working every weekends for the PMI, and then spending time, they said, okay, would you be a director of volunteering? And then eventually became a VP of volunteering. Then I learned the different aspects of marketing, finance, and how do we bring the volunteers and organize events like the ones you attended. So hosting events, it was always a great experience working with different people, especially the international audience. PMI being a global organization, being present in 200 plus countries and having more than 500,000 members, gives a unique opportunity to network with variety of people. Today, I have friends almost in every country because thanks to PMI, because we meet every year in various conferences, exchange cards, share our stories, learn their stories. So it kind of gives the feeling of belonging. Yeah. And it gives you the energy that, you know, when you come tired from the work, like you said, I've always worked for demanding organizations like Salesforce. And right now at Facebook, the work is really demanding. But when you come home, you want to crash. But again, you get a volunteering request. And then you think, you know, the only thing which can drive you at this time is a passion.
Yes.
And that's what I get out of it. And then good people. I love the people I work with. So that motivates you and gives you more energy to go further.
Yes. Passion. And I picked for your answer also, you received help in order to make it through to India to now to the Silicon Valley, where currently one of the biggest innovations in the world happens. I mean, you may debate China and other poor source of the world, but you are in one of the hottest spots. So getting help and now giving help. And this is something that gives you energy, and it's a great community, PMI. I've calculated recently 7 or 8 countries, made so many people, and it's always, you are so welcome at the events. It's not just a traditional event, and the parties and the after party, everything is special there. So I can fully echo with your energy there. But you brought me to the picture, great community, helping each other, inspiring each other, now mentoring. How do you think, what is the future of volunteering nonprofit organizations? And what do you think will be the importance of those organizations? We have a few, but now with the pandemic and with a more agile and dynamic environment, how do you see the importance and the future of volunteering organizations?
I see the importance of volunteering organizations and the nonprofits are going to grow further and further, for sure. Mm-hmm. Because the world, if you see the big and the brightest companies of the world, is moving towards the impact, right? So it's not anymore how much money you spend, or not anymore how much time you spent. It's like, what did you do out of it? Like I could say, hey, I spent 2,000 hours providing services to the nonprofit, then Peter can come and ask me, okay, so you did 2,000 hours. What did you do, right? Yes. So what did the impact you created? So some of the impact, what we could do in any organization, especially nonprofit, is huge. Mm-hmm. In the last 2 years, we launched a lot of programs. One example I could give is like a mentoring program where we paired 200 mentors and mentees, and then they went through 6 months of mentoring exercise, where when we had a couple of weeks back this appreciation event, everybody, like 85 people, joined that event and they poured their heart out. They said, thank you so much for such a program. I got the job, I got the promotion, I got the connection, and my mentor helped me, my mentor believed in me. So because when you meet the right person, you can very well say, right? So the one of the reasons a lot of people move towards a particular location, particular area like Silicon Valley, is because they believe they would meet some awesome people. They believe they would be part of that culture, which will put them into the higher orbit. So that's exactly, as a nonprofit, as PMI, we did by launching these different programs. Mm-hmm. And how do we create this impact? Okay. So even the companies can do so much because they have to survive and they have to work on these innovative products and projects and what is the priority for them. And that is where the nonprofits come, like a PMI, which becomes the authority of project management, taking the professions in a particular direction. Again, being a second pillar, helping the industry to come up with the standards and everything. And then we, a subset of the PMI, come helping the local communities, being a place to network, connect with each other, find the gap and fill those gaps. And people feel like the project managers of yesterday are not the project managers of today. And somebody could easily, with a little bit of organizing skills, could become a project manager, a little bit of communication skills. I know how to communicate. I know how to organize. I know how to write a plan. I can become a project manager. Yes, it was the case 10 years before or 5 years before. And today, they expect a lot more from a project manager. Are you technical? Are you able to code? Are you able to review the design, right? So it was not the case before, right? So today the expectation, multidisciplinary expectation is huge. So that's where I see the need for volunteering organizations, the need for nonprofits are going to be there because as a community, we can come together and easily create a better impact, which we want to see in for ourselves. So that's where I...
Fantastic. Impact, yes. Impact is the key word. My motto, not sure if you know it, is uniting global talents. Very succinct. And then I would start to tackle the toughest challenges of humanity. So not just to get top business results, but also to address as a community, you know, uniting global talents, working in our strengths area. So when I'm a true believer that the communities and the nonprofit will play exactly as you say, more important role in order to create this impact, resolving some of the toughest problems or creating some positive change. So that is great. Tell us a little bit, you have bring a huge project and program management experience and working for one of the biggest global companies and even not just one, more of them. What is the number one challenge for you leading global teams or large international project and program teams?
Yeah, I mean, but I'm thinking... when you say the number one challenge, right? So at the different programs, Peter, I have faced different challenges, honestly. I mean, I'm not able to come up with one on top of my head. At some point of time, I faced challenges with the resources, talent, to be per se, right? At some point of time, couple of my projects, I have faced a problem managing vendors, right? So the vendors we went with later could not deliver what they committed, right? So so that's another kind of challenge I have faced in many of my programs. If I have to go by, I have executed more than 10 programs, and most of the times I have faced a problem with the vendor related challenges. And mostly, I have faced the problems with managing the multiple stakeholders, and then how do we align for the KPIs of the program. So maybe, you know, if I have to pick one, I would pick that. Alignment is what I would call it, right? So basically, aligning everybody to the success criteria of the project. So that had always been a challenge. Yes. Because at one side, you work with engineers and you work with product managers and you work with the business folks and you also do work with vendors, right? So, I mean, I'm just taking the example of four. I mean, you work with many, many more people, privacy review and then legal review and all the other folks. But I'm just taking an example of engineers, product managers, and then you work with the business folks, and then you work with vendors. So everybody have their own end goals. Everybody there have own objectives. And most of the times, and it is not aligned with the goals of the project, what we wanted to achieve, yes. Right? So bringing this alignment have been always my biggest challenge as a program manager. How do we get that alignment? Sometimes I have faced engineers who say, you know, I'm going to work on it for only 2 weeks because this program, working on this program is not going to put me into the next level. See, his alignment is not there, right? He cares for the program. He wants to get his work done, but he wants something else to be done. And from the product side, their expectation is this is their main core product they want to deliver. And then from business side, hey, they wanted to only budget certain percentages to this product. And then from the vendor perspective, they're trying to either, you know, like stretch the goal so that they can play longer, or they wanted to, you know, like see how this program success is going to help them in the future, right? So there are like multiple ways they look at it, operate it, and align it. And as a program manager, everybody, or I would suggest everyone, to play this alignment piece more carefully, understand everybody's objective, and then play along, and then be open and transparent about the progress, and then reporting to the stakeholders have been a biggest challenge.
Oh, great, great, great insight. Alignment as a key word, and then having vendors, various stakeholders, including sponsors, and then the resources. By the way, you probably seen my new book, this Power Teams Beyond Borders. Not sure how it is. It is exactly Beyond Borders, talk about beyond organizational or any sort of borders, because we tackle big challenges. You need more vendors. You don't have the skills and knowledge and the capability in one organization. And then how can you unite people beyond any kind of borders, geographical, virtual teams, but also organizational boundaries. And as you said, key success factors, clarity. I call it, that's why the logo is here, the atom. The nucleus, the goal should be very clear for everyone involved. So the nucleus is the goal and the purpose of the team or the project in this case, which as a gravity kind of aligns all involved parties, being various stakeholders, vendors, and so on. So
Beyond Borders, I would definitely look it up, and I have not read it yet, but I'm going to definitely order one. What is the core of it? I'm interested because that's something I would love to get more insights from someone like you. So what is the core insights from that, if you can briefly share a few points?
Essentially, the 10 success factors to retain the gravity. It will hijack our podcast, but let me give you the top three in a sense. It's not about the building a great team, regardless how big, or even great virtual community. It's around very clear purpose and goal. And this is like I compare a virtual team with the atom, where we have a nucleus and various particles flying around. And the goal in virtual team is to retain the gravity despite the distance or time zones or cultural differences. And the nucleus is not the manager or the project manager who has a key role, it's the goal and the purpose. So setting the goal bottom up, transparency, that's very clear. I have the 10 big rocks is my method. So if I go through all 10, it will be a longer discussion. And now you're here to give us insights, but discover the unique features of everyone, the strengths, work on the strengths. That's why uniting global talents, have a clear goal, then build a structure communication, not the manager centric, but structure where everyone can contribute and shine. And we have knowledge management aspects, feedback, and then the culture, the unique culture of recognition, praise, winning spirit, and so on. So for each of these, I have a number of tips, practical tips, but also case studies from the practice where with our several organizations, we managed to build teams and communities. But thanks for asking. We'll put the link, and I'll give you a signed copy one day. If we don't meet very soon, I'll ship you one. Sure. You deserve it full time. We touched upon culture. So tell me, and you live in the Silicon Valley, which has a unique culture. I mean, my first question would be, what is the importance of organizational culture? Now, to drive innovation, in the digital age where innovation becomes more kind of important and at a fast pace, what is the importance of the organizational culture from our perspective versus process and goal setting? What's the role of the culture?
Yeah, like you called out at a very higher level as well, right? So culture plays a vital role. Because some cultures really attract people who have aspiring or achieving mindset. Mm-hmm. So honestly speaking, 6 to 7 years back, I was living in the different parts of the United States. And then I wanted to be here to be part of this unique, amazing culture because a lot of innovation is happening. And there is a reason why they got it right, and because it's a culture of talent, I happen to work with some of the great organizations here, or meet with a lot of my colleagues or friends from different organizations. They shared about how they worked in their teams, how they drove innovation in some of their teams, and all those stories really inspired early for me as well. So even at nonprofit, like how we change the culture of the organization, suddenly we could see the way things are moving more faster, better, and smoother, right? Mm-hmm. So it is for sure a conscious effort. Like just to give you an example, in a nonprofit world before getting into the for-profit world, right? Even in PMI, I joined as a volunteer 2014. And then if you see 2015, 2016, per year, we used to have 30 or 40 programs. And then we became more trusting each other. We became more delegating to our literal leaders. Then having a controlling culture, we just let trust people run the show. And last year, we were able to host more than 100 programs, 100 events, which is impossible for a volunteer. Yes. Organizations, right? So literally two programs every week, right? So which is and like you have seen, the IPMs and some of these programs are attended well over 100 people. Mm-hmm. Right. Packed audiences. So that's the good result of culture. When I see culture, it's not some invisible ingredients, right? So it's like some simple things, right? Are we consistent with the way we behave? Like, do we trust our team members? And one thing I learned in 2020 is, are we being authentic? Mm-hmm. And can we say who I am? Like today you asked me, hey, who are you, right? So if I am hesitant, I'm going to hold back some of my information because I don't know whether I can trust Peter. so that's I have seen it many times. I have seen it even today at workplace. People can't be their true authentic self. Yep. Even at volunteering, people can't share. They say, okay, let me know, what do you want me to do? Okay, you want me to work on this document? Okay, let's go. So that kind of a culture we found like a little bit not effective. Mm-hmm. So if you are able to get full authentic self, fully yourself, you are what you are, you tell your strength, you tell your weakness, and you get your friends. So the trust and authenticity. And then third one or fourth one would be empathy, right? So are you able to relate to other person? Like, for example, in both ways, if somebody doesn't, who doesn't get it, okay, are you able to relate to him that he doesn't get that concept? Are you able to explain it to him? Are you going to slow down and share with him? And if he's smart, even can you empathize with him? If he's really smart, if you're smart, understand that he gets it. Don't spend your time and energy explaining it. Don't waste your time, right? So make sure, document it, move on. So in both the ways, empathy for one another, right? Mm-hmm. And so these are all some components. I mean, there are definitely, you know, like a lot more. Some companies get it so right, and you very well know about the culture of a place as well. And then this is what attracts a bright individual to come and work. Absolutely. For example, a few years back, again, going back to the PMA example, we didn't have a lot of our volunteers from some of the top Silicon Valley companies. But today, if you see the leadership team, I mean, when I joined, I was working for Salesforce, and then we had people working from Google, and some of them working from Wells Fargo and Facebook, and all the other organizations and a lot of other startups. They became a volunteer, right? So they saw, they became, and then they were able to bring their friends, and eventually now we were able to get some diverse, talented people, and which we were able to pull it to the next level, right? Because you get a different ideas, and an individual when a lot of different, I mean, that's the success of Silicon Valley, right? I mean, it attracts talent from every parts of the world. And when they come together and then when they share stories, hey, this is how things happen in India. This is how things happen in China. This is how things happen in Europe. So people can relate to that. People can understand when they work on a solution, that solution works for every country, keeping everybody in mind. That's the beauty of this cultural mix, right? So that's something definitely, I believe, is one of the key ingredients of success in Silicon Valley as well.
Yes, amazing insight from somebody who lives there and live it day in, day out. You've touched upon trust, you've touched upon empathy, and these are discoveries. There were Google study project, Aristotle, they discovered their highest performing teams, what's in common. And at some point they saw that they speak equal time in the meeting, nearly equal, but there were some exceptions. And then the one characteristics that every team without any exception was psychological safety. Exactly as you said, being safe to show who you are authentically with your weaknesses, with your vulnerabilities, being able to take risks, not being afraid that people will laugh at you if you fail, or it will have negative consequences. And then the other aspect you said, talent, this transparency, this trust, which is a number one. Also, the failing to build trust is a number one failure for global teams to fail. So it's both sides a key factor. So being able to build trust attracts talent on the other side. So you have, you know, Silicon Valley hotspots, talent wants to be there, companies competing very hard. I've recently read the books, No Rules, Rules from the founder of Netflix. Yes, and Netflix is all about talent. They say, you know, they attract the top talent. They say, if you just perform normally, they would just give you a nice package and get you leave. They would keep only the people that if competition wants to take, they will fight very hard to keep. So it's really another level of talent. But in order to attract this talent in the first place, you need the right culture, as you rightly said. Maybe just when I was in Silicon Valley, I was doing a workshop with a startup, a digital startup. And then after the session, one of the engineers, a very talented guy, I asked him how it is to work in the Silicon Valley. And he said, it is tough. It is cutthroat competition because you have so much talent. Now, how can you marry those two things? On one hand, having a culture that attracts talent, and on the other, let this talent thrive and not compete with each other. What would be your insight or tip there?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And then based on, you know, like your experiences, what you are asking, how I look at it is, so the cutthroat competition part, I'm maybe, you know, you can correct me if my understanding is correct or not. It comes from internal compass rather than an external driven one, because this is my personal experience working for profit and non-profit, right? So when bunch of highly performing individuals are put in a place together and they are given a task to meet the objectives, and then they work very hard to bring the best solution and in the most efficient way. So what happens is, like, they want to work fast, they want to get the best solution out, and so in that process sometimes you have to be cutthroat. Like you and I could be real friends, and you propose an idea, I say, hey, it doesn't work, and because of so and so reason. And sometimes you may take it personal. Oh, how can you say it doesn't work? But it is either because I have done it, and my point of saying it doesn't work is not to really hurt your feeling or put you down, or not to tell you that I know something which you don't know. It is because maybe I worked on the exact way you did and it did not work for me, and I'm trying to save your time. But if somebody looks at outside, they may think that, hey, this is wrong. But somebody who's inside, they would appreciate it. So that's why I said, if you see the hiring of all these, be it Netflix or Amazon or all the organizations, so they go through multiple rounds. We all go through, you know, tons of questions, tons of people talk to us. Reason being is you want to make sure you are what you are, right? So you are not pretending to be one time right, right? So most of the times you are right. Yes. So that's why this cutthroat competition comes into picture. But if you see, there are enough opportunities for you to have your shot, right? So if you see, maybe I can give you a random example of in my career, maybe 10 years back, if I go back, or 5 years back, if I go back, if somebody's asking me a question on a technical concept, which I have a vague idea, right? So they ask about some particular server. Hey, do you know the server concept? Assume that I have a 10% knowledge on that topic. I would jump into a meeting and talk 4 or 5 lines because I know something. But of late, what I realized is if I don't know enough knowledge about that particular topic, better be quiet and shut my mouth in the meeting and listen, right? Or come prepared for that meeting about that topic and be talk relevantly. So this is what, for an outsider, it could be a cutthroat competition. Mm-hmm. For an insider, I learned this, right? So I learned this because I learned in that meeting, there are people who are extremely knowledgeable in that concept. And already 4 or 5 people are sitting. Why am I unnecessarily with the 10% knowledge going and consuming more time? Let them finish it. And if they need more ideas, let me pitch in. I'm not saying I should keep quiet, but my turn, I should give the time to the people who really know, who really need to be there, rather than me pitching in and then sharing my ideas. So that's how I look at that, the whole picture, and then take it going. So that's one of the reasons, right? So like your reference to no rules, rules, or having a great talent is what makes every organization different. Because organizations, they have set a clear boundary, clear culture, clear rules. And then where these individuals, highly performing individuals, highly talented individuals come and thrive. Actually, they all thrive, right? I mean, if you see most of these companies, engineers thrive 80 to 90%. Of course, every system has its own failures. And then few people drop out, few people become a misfit. It does happen, but most of them thrive. They thrive very well, in my view.
Amazing. Thanks for these insights. Really, as you said, internal compass. So the cutthroat, it's to some extent internal perception. And if the leader managed to build a psychological safety and enable it, it's not just to build it with your own hands, you enable it with all the... So then the cutthroat and this big density of talents can bring phenomenal results, which happens.
Yeah. When we talk about, again, psychological safety, I just wanted to add here, right? I mean, it's so we talk about so many things. It's some of the things are subtle, right? So for example, let me take an example of this podcast recording, right? You and I exchanged a few texts. Literally, we spent 5 minutes or maximum or less than that. And then here we are, right? Yes. But there are some episodes where I had to appear for recording where I spent 2 hours in agreeing to a time, agreeing to a format, agreeing to... So I'm not saying that is wrong or this is right. My comparison is, though we spent time 1.5 years back, there is a underlying trust between us, right? You have been yourself when we met, right? You shared your family, you shared your dream, you danced with me at the party, and then we had lunch together. So that's exactly what I meant by authentic, right? So you were truly, I mean, though we spent a day or two, to me, so Peter is this complete authentic person who's like a great athlete, great family man, you know, he's a great author, Amazon's best-selling author, and I want to have a long-lasting, everything happened very quick. because you appear to be the whole person, rather than if you would have behaved like other speaker, you showed up to the event just before the speaker, and still you are great. I'm not saying you're not great, but I would not have known your complete self.
Yes.
So that's where they say the psychological safety. Now in our every interaction, I text you, you text me, and then things get done. Oh, okay, we didn't even spend time. Things gets done. So that's what happens in these great companies too, when you create that psychological safety.
Thanks for mentioning that. And for virtual teams, this is what we start with, you know, personality and focus, get authentic self. We do it through the lifeline, discover the strengths. But if you feel that some managers don't do that, they just go directly into goal setting and, you know, organizing. Spend some time to discover the holistic human being, as you say.
Exactly.
And then the trust is there, and then you will save a lot of time on the way. So great. Thank you for the reference. Tell me, what was your most exotic experience leading a large project or a program or a global team, something which was exotic in a sense, unusual, unique? Or most exciting?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, there are many. I'm just trying to think for from my early days career to the recent ones, I'm trying to think which one, or from my nonprofit experience. So I think there are many. I mean, honestly speaking, I don't know whether I can say one program implementation stood out very well than other. When it comes to work, at least I'm saying, like from the for-profit organizations I have worked for Target, the retailer based out of Minneapolis, where we have worked on some of the cool programs where we saved a lot of money for Target and also helped the vendors to reach the products on the aisles. So I think that one, again, we had to work with a lot of big vendor partners like Procter & Gamble and Unilever and all the other big players of the world. And then my job as a program manager is to make sure, how do we get these vendors' product in the right aisles, mm-hmm. and also secure some extra space in the Target home space and company space divisions. Mm-hmm. So I think one of that programs I recall as a clear success, because that's one of the biggest programs I undertook early in my career, which is like more than 10 years back, and which involved more than $60 million of spend, and also it involved a global team. Great. And the recent one, I would say at Salesforce, one of the programs where I involved is like working with go-to-market strategy for Brazil. Mm-hmm. Again, if you know traditionally, go-to-market plans for India, go-to-market plans for Brazil are most complex because both the countries follow extremely difficult rules, financial rules and everything. And then you have a lot of people, stakeholders in play. Like, first of all, you have your engineering team, product team, operations team, and you work with your business sales, and you work with various different vendors, and always, right? So these plans don't go according to the plan. And then what I have seen traditionally, you carve out some part of the scope for a dot release, as we call in an IT implementation, right? So we go live, and then some patches we would apply at the later point of time. So I think at Salesforce, I have been fortunate to be part of the Brazil go-to-market implementation. So that's one of the programs where I really enjoyed driving it. And like I mentioned to you earlier, in 2019, we launched a mentorship program, partnering with a bunch of different local organizations at San Francisco. And again, it was a huge success. And then we delivered continuously last year and this year, and created a huge interest in the chapter community members among the program. So I think, you know, these are all some of the programs I would say that I was really excited, and I was fortunate to be part of these as well.
Oh, great opportunities. Go to market Brazil. I mean, these BRIC countries, you're touching billions of peoples in a way, and also on the volunteering front, the impact you're creating, as you mentioned. So great to have you with us and sharing these insights. What would be your number one advice for people leading a global team or a large project team?
Yeah, I would always say this: lead from the heart. Definitely, you know, that has been, I think, you know, like you mentioned, you have been a big proponent of that as well. When you came here, you said, be authentic. I think sometimes people try to imitate others, try to fit in. Mm-hmm. And what I learned eventually is like, you can always bring your value if you're authentic self.
Yes.
And, you know, historically, I have seen authentic leaders have been more appreciated and led a greater teams at difficult times as well, right? So I think, you know, there is no one such way to lead, right? A lot of people believe that this is the way to lead, or this is the place to be. No, nothing like that. If you're true to yourself, if this is what is true you, and you spoke from your heart, you lead from your heart, I think, you know, in any team globally, you know, people respect it, right? Like for example, like for whatever shortcomings some of our leaders have in yesterday's world or today's world, people still believe in them. Like, you know, there are a lot of controversies about Steve Jobs, but people around the world believed in him and believed in the innovations he brought to the world and respected him for what he is, right? So I think I would really stick with that saying.
Fantastic. Lead from your heart, as Vijay say, because some people say global team, we need to rely on technology, and it is certainly important and so on. Still, heart from your perspective and rich experiences is leading, authentic yourself, connect on a heart-to-heart level with people globally. And get
because leaders are the central nervous system. They connect various stakeholders, right? So the leaders are the figures we all look up to. I mean, if you kind of, you know, like not very clear with the way you are thinking, or not clear with the way what you want to do, and people start having a doubt, it becomes very difficult.
Yes. Tell me, what do you read at the moment?
Okay, so I am reading How Innovation Works. So okay. I'm not sure you have read Matt Ridley's books. So Matt Ridley is one of my favorite authors. So I have earlier read his Rational Optimist and I think Genomics. Mm-hmm. And so I'm reading. I mean, I don't have it here. But, How Innovation Works. That's what I'm reading right now, and it's fantastic read. I mean, I would strongly suggest. He in fact talks about why it flourishes in freedom. He talks about, you know, like how innovation traditionally worked. Even he gives a lot of references to Silicon Valley and other places too.
Perfect. Great recommendation. Now, approaching the end of our conversation, two questions related more to the future. What do you think is the future of virtual teams, remote teams?
So I think the future is here. Right. The future is here. The world is going to be increasingly you know, like we are closer, right? Like Peter, I mean, this is real. I already took a reference of you and me, right? Yeah. So we met only once, but we feel like we are very close entity, right? So we both know each other for years. Like you said, you know, like I say something, you can quickly do it. You say something, I can quickly do it. So it's future is right now, right here, right? And like I said, even through volunteering, I made connections in Kenya, Nigeria, or India, or in China, in UK, in parts of various countries in Europe, in US, in South America, North America, everywhere, I was able to connect and talk to people. And some of them I have not met. Mm-hmm. But when I feel like, oh, if I need something in Sao Paulo, I know who to talk to right now. I feel like, oh, okay, so it's right here, right? And so the because world has become increasingly virtual, and people have, I mean, pre-COVID, people are easily able to travel and connect and understand. It's very important, some of the tools we use, some of the things we learned in person may not work in virtual, so we may need to adapt, right? So that's one of the reasons we invited you to learn from you and your work, your concepts in your book or whatever. And we continuously want to work with you and others on learning, how do we do it? So not only in this podcast, we talked about various things. We talked about innovation, we talked about culture, we talked about authenticity, right? So it's the same thing. We need to understand, what's this virtual theme? What does it look like? Mm-hmm. What are some of the way we need to shift, right? I think we all shifted because of the force, right? So we last week we celebrated Christmas with our friends through Zoom call for 6 hours. We learned how to be virtual and how to have fun, right? Same way, we need to shift how to work together, how to build some amazing things in future with the virtual teams and remote teams. I think it's very essential, it's very important, and it is here, right? It's to me, it is present now.
Yes. Oh, great. I love your insights also on a business front, that we have to be more virtual, and COVID kind of forced us to be more virtual and even celebrate virtually, but also on a personal level, having like a huge community, you know, people you could reach out, you know, you feel connected, and it's a great asset. It is a great feeling. So it is certainly an area with full of opportunities and possibilities. If you look at it in a positive way, invest your heart, and you can also gain a lot from it, and together create new beautiful things and impact. My last question would be around the new normal, because many companies now are contemplating, now we have a seasons, holidays and time to reflect a bit. What would be your bet on the new normal? How do you think it will normalize? I mean, we used to have these beautiful offices, particularly in the Silicon Valley, companies invested. Now, companies like Dropbox go virtual first. They also have beautiful office, but they say everything which is individual productivity, you can do virtual, you can do remote from home, or if you don't have a proper space at home, we will invest in a co-located space so you could do individual, but then we will have exciting spaces to co-create, to get together in a smaller groups, brainstorm and so on. What would be your bet, living in the Silicon Valley and being part of a great voluntary organization, how do you think the new normal would look like?
So I'm looking at your question at two levels. One is this pandemic related one, right? One is, maybe let me take it as a short term and long term, right? So short term, if we are talking about, okay, this year we couldn't get back to work as much as we want to. So will 2021 would be the same? So my bet would be personally, yes. I mean, I mean, like a lot of leaders in Silicon Valley say, okay, we are hopeful that from July onwards, we would be back to office. So that's the thing. I don't want to overthink that. So with the vaccine already administered to the healthcare professionals, and it's going to hit the general public soon in next month. And I'm really positive that June or July next year, we would all be back to work or school and everything, right? So the things are going to get back to normal. That's my bet on the COVID-related impact, right? So on the long term, what you're saying is the way the work itself is going to transform is going to be definitely different, right? I mean, the knowledge industry has evolved so much. And in the future, it's going to be a lot more skilled work. People do a lot more consulting. People would be, like you mentioned, people would be doing a lot more remote. They don't need to be at a particular place. They don't need to work for a particular company. They don't need to work 9 to 5, or they need to be, they can, a lot of creative work is going to be available for them. That's what I would say, right? So a lot of freelancing work. That's what I mean. Like right now, the projects could be given to somebody as a freelance and they could do it. Right now, the work is not lucrative. Eventually, it could happen that, hey, you would be working on this cool work on your own terms. You would have a milestone deliverables. In 6 months, you would be finishing it and you would pay 200K. So yeah, I mean, in that case, that's all the work you do for a year. And then next 6 months, you take a break, vacation in Europe, and then come back next year, pick up some assignments. So that's my bet on future with respect to work, because today, that kind of opportunity is not easily available. Mm-hmm. But in future, I expect that a lot more high-end creative works are going to be available virtually, remotely, and people can do it. It will provide them a lot of flexibility and creativity and everything. And it's not going to be restricted by location or place. Mm-hmm. That's my bet of the future as well, right? So,
yeah. And maybe just to put a number, I'm a mathematician. Currently, if you look, Europe is a bit more, we have more liberties in terms of moving and working. So in Bulgaria, where I'm originally from, I work with many IT companies, and currently they're between 5 and 30% of the workforce. They used to be 100% in the office. Now they're like 15 is the average. They're in the office, the other work remote, and then take turns and so on. In the banks, where you have more client facing and so on, currently is between 30 and 50%. So if we look long-term, and the life is so dynamic, but if we look 1 year from now, how, and it for sure depends on the industry, but let's just take a broad, what do you think will be the percentage of the people working in the office from the 100% in the past? And the rest apparently will do their contribution remotely.
I don't know how do we generalize this. So I'm taking this question mainly as a tech industry question.
Yes.
If we take a tech industry, especially in Silicon Valley, already most of these companies have a lot of working from home, flex policies. I don't think many of these companies even monitor employees' time or anything. It's more of a delivery, self-induced, like we talked about, right? Yeah. Self-induced pressure, self-induced reduction and everything. And I really don't have a right data to talk about other industries in US. It's being really huge because there is this Amazon, there are like a lot of delivery, there are these restaurants and everything. And my knowledge is in this particular question mainly on that tech world. And maybe I would say 50%. Yeah, I would just go with 50%.
Okay. Vijay, it's been fantastic talking with you, reconnecting again, discovering that it's been 1.5 years, but feels like a lifetime. And I really hope and trust we will create many beautiful things together. Thank you for your time, your energy.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Yes, I wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And it was great, as usual, talking to you. And I also wish to meet you again in person in 2021 soon.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. Good night. Good day. Take care.